I understand why they don't know it. Look how many people don't know about it, don't know about how to leverage it. And the people that I was around my whole life, they knew nothing about it. They couldn't even teach me if they wanted to. So I understand that you just can't do what you don't know.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Shane Soap Podcast. Today I have a very special guest. He's a seven-figure entrepreneur here in Atlanta, Georgia, and he's an expert in credit and business funding. He's built one of the most successful school communities of all time. I'm excited about learning more about that. Creditpreneur Group, helping thousands of entrepreneurs build credit and start their own business. His name is Kenneth Smith, a.k.a. Smitty the Goat. I like that.
Yes, sir.
Man, thanks for being here.
Yes, sir. Nice to meet you, man. Nice to meet you.
So tell me about the nickname.
Yeah, it's just my last name. So my last name is Smith.
Yeah.
And when I first started, I knew that I was going to do like the internet stuff. I'm like, all right, I got to come up with something cool that someone can call me by if they were to, like, be on the internet and just pass by my social media. It's just my first and last name is like, it's cool. But, like, I wanted somebody. So I just thought of, like, two or three names, and I decided one, and I just went with that one. Nothing too deep to it. It was just my last name, Smith.
No, I love that. So they said that you told me before we started, you've been in it about 4 years with credit. So how did you get into this?
Yeah. So a friend of mine started first. Mm-hmm. So he tried to tell me how and what to do. I wasn't listening at first until I came about a situation to where I had to try to use my own credit. Mm-hmm. So it was bad. I had like 400 credit scores. Like, man, I had a few things in my name that was derogatory. And I couldn't use it. And I started to have to get things in my mom's name, my sister's name. I'm like, bro, I'm a grown man. Mm-hmm. It's like I got to do things in other people's name. I don't have my credentials together. I can't go get the car I want. I'm like, all right, I got to be able to take care of this thing. Mm-hmm. So my friend had got information on it before. He got his stuff on clean. He got his stuff built up. And he would start leveraging it himself. And it was an aha moment for me when he got approved for like $50,000 in one day. So I was trying to save up $50,000 for so long and was never able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to get approved for $50,000 in one day. And I had a big aha moment at that moment. I'm like, all right, I've been doing this all wrong. Probably I could have been easily leveraging that a long time ago to be able to, you know, start something. So like I was wanting to do like clothes or resell shoes or something at that time. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't come up with the money to be able to buy the inventory I wanted to be able to start it up. So I was never able to start it. Mm-hmm. But when I learned about that, I was like, okay, maybe this could be the route I can use to be able to start, to be able to grow something I want to start. I didn't have the funds, so I had to be able to leverage other people's money to do it. And once he showed me that, I went into like a learning binge, man. I just needed to know everything about it. How did it happen? You know,
yeah.
How do we do this? How do we set it up? How do we structure it? How do we like everything about it? So I went in like a 6-month learning binge, man. And I just wanted to master and learn everything about it from the beginning to the end of it.
Man, so was you focusing real heavy on personal credit first and then went to business, or were you doing both at the same time at that time?
So it was both. It was like credit repair. It was cleaning your credit, and then it was building it, and then it was the funding part. So I started with the credit repair part first. I wanted to learn everything about how do I repair my own credit? How do I fix it? How do I clean it up to where I can get it to a point where I have a good credit score for once? So I had to learn that process first. How do I dispute things? How do I take things off our credit report? How do I clean these things up that I once did bad on and be able to now put myself in a position to build it to get some personal funding or personal credit to be good and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised at how many people really don't have any education on credit?
50-50. Yeah. Because I knew when I didn't know about it what I were thinking and what world I was in and where I come from in Chicago. Nobody never taught us this stuff, so I understand why they don't know it, but it still was 50-50 of shocking of, wow, look how many people don't know about it, don't know about how to leverage it, don't know about how to clean it, don't know how to build it, get it clean, get it prepared to be able to use it and leverage it. It's just so crazy. But I understand it from the other side perspective of I was in that realm of thinking too, or not educated on it, not taught it, not around it, know nothing about it. And the people that I was around my whole life, they knew nothing about it. They couldn't even teach me if they wanted to. So I understand that you just can't do what you don't know. And so I seen both sides.
Oh my goodness. So can you tell the people at home what's a perfect credit score and what's like the worst credit score you've ever seen personally?
Yeah, I think I almost believe I seen like a 390 something. Like, it's like a 390 something, like a 400 flat, something like that. It was very low. And you said what's a perfect credit report?
Yeah, what's a perfect credit score for those that don't know at home?
So I like to look at it as a perfect credit report versus score. The score doesn't matter that much to me anymore. It's about how do we build out our credit profile in order to be ready for the banks. So I typically tell people 7 to 10 accounts primarily. So these are things that are in your name that you're paying on time every month. You want to have low utilization. So the banks tell you under 30%. Me personally, my strategy is stay under 10% of your utilization of your credit cards on your personal side. I like to have low hard inquiries, no negative items, no late payments, no derogatory marks, no bankruptcies, no repos, none of those negative derogatory things that can hold your credit score back. And once you meet those pretty much standards, and the last thing I would say is probably have two credit cards for at least $2,500 to $5,000 limits on them, so that you can have a nice foundational report, so that when you do go look for funding or you do go look for approvals, there you're meeting all the requirements that they're looking for from the beginning.
Yeah, I can tell you're nerdy about this, man. I love it. That is awesome. All right, so you got to slow down for some of the guys. Okay, so you said that you got to need 7 to 12 types of account. Do you need to have like 7 to 12 credit cards, or does it need to be a mix?
Yeah, so it definitely needs to be a mix. I'd rather you have like an installment loan, maybe like a small jewelry place loan or something like that, an auto loan. Then credit cards are, you know, some of the type of accounts we like to use too that are cool. We like to use rent reporters. So we can be able to get our rent reported to our credit report and backdate it for a few years.
I didn't know you could backdate it, man.
Yeah, you can backdate it for years. So now you can be able to establish a primary account on your profile, and it's backdated for all the time you were paying it on time. We can be able to establish that on some of the accounts. That's like one of the strong, good ones. Another one that we like to use is like secure loans.
Secure loans, okay.
With certain credit unions that allow you to put your own money up to be able to create an installment loan that you got to pay back with your own money, but then you establish that on your credit report.
So basically, that'd be like putting $5,000 in the bank account, and then give you a loan for $5,000, basically.
So we'll put $5,000 in the bank account. One of the best banks I like to go to is Navy Federal. Navy Federal is credit union is very lenient when it comes to these. You put $5,000 in your savings, they'll give you a loan for $5,000. Now, this is a trick we like to do with it. We'll take the $5,000 that they give us, and we'll pay them off 90%. And the reason why we pay them off 90% right away in like a few days is because in 30 days, when it reports to your credit report, you look like as though you have a 90% off paid off installment loan on your credit report.
That's really good,
within 30 days. So it's like little tricks and pools we like to leverage.
Usually when I've gotten a loan, like let's just say I get a $10,000 loan or whatever, and then it shows full max capacity, then it takes like 4 to 6 months to show up, pay down, and helps my credit score tinker back up. That's a great one right there. I like that.
Those are good type of mixture of accounts you can get to be able to build it properly.
Okay. Can you explain for everyone what is credit utilization? You're like pop, 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 pop. So, and is that as a whole or per loan, like per credit card?
Got you. So loans are not typically integrated into your credit utilization. It's literally going off your credit card. So how much you use on your credit card is your utilization. So if I had a $10,000 credit card, the banks are telling you don't use over $3,000 of that, or we're going to start penalizing you on your points on your credit score. So I like to say if you can stay under 10%.
Under
10% of that. So if we got a $10,000 credit card and we use just $1,000 of it, if you're using less than that, I'm okay with that. Like when we're going to look for to get approvals, we want to stand at 10% because I've seen better odds of approvals get approved once you have a lower credit utilization. So your credit card utilization is just how much you're using off your credit cards from your limits that you have.
And then now I know some guys, they like I have a bunch of certain credit. I have a Delta card, for example. I get points. Do you do any of the travel hacks and all that stuff too, or just mainly focus on just the credit part?
So I just leverage it. I just run my life through them, though. So one thing I do is I run my life through my credit cards. I never spend cash ever again in life. Would I spend cash? Because I don't get nothing in return off every dollar I spend. So I even it's a piece of gum, if it's my light bill, car note, whatever I could pay off my credit card, I'm paying it because I get something in return off every dollar I spend. One cool trick I like to leverage with my business American Express credit card is, you know, you run ads on our gold business American Express business credit card, you get four times the rewards points. So as you're spending so much, you're going to spend advertising dollars or marketing on your business. Man, I have gotten so much money off my American Express card. Like I think I had like 2 million rewards points.
Oh my gosh. Just do you travel on that and stuff?
Yeah, I travel on that.
Or do you kind of hoard it? Because I don't know, I like to collect
it. It depends. Yeah, it depends. Yeah. But I do leverage to travel for free the whole year. Anywhere I want to go, I can be able to travel for free. Or hotels I stay at, I travel for free as well. So that's cool. Sometimes I leverage it to do other things. Maybe some liabilities that I want to buy, I'll leverage my rewards points to be able to get them versus my income.
So you get into all the lounges and stuff like that.
100%. Yeah.
Okay, I'll go into credit pair real quick. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to jump all around because I love credit stuff, honestly. Okay. I feel like it's a nerdy world and not many people do it. Yeah. And it's important. They don't teach anything about credit, how to get a loan in school. It's very important what you're teaching, man.
Number one thing.
So what is the most common thing that you see on someone's credit report? You're like, I knew that was there probably. Like, it's usually there. What is that?
Either somebody has a collection or a late payment. One of the two. Okay. If I can almost look at the 100 reports, then about 90 of them are going to have a collection or a late payment on it. Yeah. That's what I've been seeing a lot.
Are those fair? I heard late payments are the hardest thing to get off. Is that true? Is there, well, other than bankruptcy or something like that, but like, what's the hardest?
Bankruptcies are easier to remove than late payments from what I've seen. Late payments are hard. They're very hard. They're very tedious. Man, you're going to struggle, have a struggling war to be able to try to attack those things. So when now, my process is, if someone has late payments, especially multiple of them, you got two options now. I try to push people to, I use a consumer law attorney. All right, I'll take these people to court. I'll leverage their expertise and what they know about, you know, inaccuracies and being able to, you know, make them apply by the law versus things they report on our credit report, and try to, you know, trip them up that way and go against them in that capacity. Or sometimes it's a conversation about removing the whole account.
Remove the whole account.
Yeah, because it's like you're going to struggle trying to remove these things, and it takes so long for them to just fall off themselves. You'll be better off like losing the account and the history of the account and removing the late payment and just building on top of what you have besides that late payment versus trying to attack the late payment over and over again. You're not getting nowhere.
No, that makes sense a lot.
Yeah.
So let's just say, let's have two scenarios, okay? You got a kid that he just turns 18. He has no credit. What's the top five, six things you would say, hey, do this, 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 and this now to get started?
Yep. I would definitely go get like a secure credit card. So that's putting on your own money, whether if it's 200, 100, 500. You got to start establishing something on your credit report to start building. And then you want to get credit builder accounts. So they got like Credit Strong, Kickoff. They got like the Players Loan I was telling you about. They got secure credit cards. They have accounts like Tomo. So basically, these type of accounts is what you can leverage to use your own money for credit building purposes. So I can put my own $50 up. I can put my own $100 up. I can put my own $500 up to be able to establish an account, and I just pay off a monthly payment to where they'll leverage that as my payments on time for this account to be able to build my credit report up. And the next thing is, if you could find somebody in your family to be added on as an authorized user to their credit card to be able to enhance your credit report 30 to 60 points and get some type of history, leveraging your mom, grandma, uncle, or cousin, anyone that if you can have access to someone who has good credit that can help you get leverage from all the benefit that they did that was good, they can add you on as an authorized user to be able to help you benefit as well. I think that's very vital to what I'm like going to do for my children. All my credit cards, I'm going to add them on as authorized users. They're going to have a pretty, you know, pre-built score already before they even turn 18, you know.
Let's just say my mom, she adds me as an authorized user and she has a bunch of debt on that credit. Will that pass on to me too, or just the length?
So that utilization definitely passes over to you.
Okay.
So you got to be careful. Be careful in choosing who you decide that you're going to get on an authorized user with, because their credit card utilization reflects on your credit report every month of what they're using. So if the banks is going to, or the credit reports are going to penalize you for high utilization, you're going to take that hit too, just as well as them on your credit score and credit report, because you're reaping the benefit of everything they do on that account and card. So if someone uses 50% of their limit, do you take the credit hit too, right, with them?
Okay, so you want to find the most responsible person in your family and say, hey, add me on the card and don't spend on it, right?
Keep me under 30%.
Okay. 10%. All right, what's some other things that you say, hey, keep doing?
Once you establish that, man, it's just keep paying, put everything on auto pay. That's the number one thing that I've seen a lot of people make mistakes with. they don't put it on auto pay and they're trying to start up multiple different accounts and then they forget or they may can't pay it or not. But like I've been seeing more than not, people forget about this specific account that was supposed to be paid on March 1st and now become, you know, 30 days late and they like, I just forgot. Well, if we just make sure we put everything on auto pay, that we don't have to have our conscience worrying about it all the time or forgetting. If we do forget, it's already getting taken out of our account. So always have the money in your account that the minimum balance, at least minimum, that could be taken care of out of your account and take care of your minimum balance to be able to make that payment on time, auto pay it. So we don't have to worry about those accounts anymore, you know, or forgetting or making a mistake of getting late payments because we forgot.
Okay. Okay. No, that's a good point. And I had a random question as you were talking.
Yeah.
So I've heard people tell, you know, I've traveled and I hear each person has their own thing. Okay. But they're not all like credit experts like you, you know? Yeah. So I've heard some people say, hey, Shane, don't pay your credit card all the way off. Leave like a little bit on there, or should I pay it all the way off? I've always been curious about that.
Yeah, I'm with them on leave a little balance.
So if I have if you have a $10,000 balance, you should leave like, what, $100?
Yeah, I'll leave like 40, 50 bucks on there. That's okay, okay. Yeah.
But you don't have to leave like, oh, leave right at 7%.
Nah, it's no like, dollar amount. That doesn't matter. But like a small amount, I do leave small balances. I don't want the bank to feel like I'm not using what they gave me at all. You know what I mean? So make it feel like I'm not useful the limit that they gave me. But I definitely pay things off often. When I use my credit cards, I pay right back off sometimes. Use my credit card, I pay it off with the money in my bank account. I use it like that a lot, but I definitely leave small balances on there.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you want to make sure they use those starter cards that you talked about, authorized user, and make sure they at least make the payments. All right. Yes. Now, what's some other things that a new guy, new person building their credit needs to know?
Yeah.
So or is that really the good start right there?
That's really the core of what they need to do. If they can build off of that and not get late payments and not get have things going collection, man, they on a good start because credit reports, when you start building and doing good with one or two accounts, they start you off in the green. You start off in the 700s if you never had anything negative that reporting and you have all this good history from if you got a card and you got like the credit card and you got this like installment loan. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you got three accounts that you're paying on time every month and they're all good. They're going to start you off in the green with a 700 credit score. So as long as you can maintain those on-time payments of those accounts and keep building different type of accounts on top of it with a mixture, then you're on the right track. You're on the right track to having a great profile and ready to be able to use it.
Man, I love this. I love nerding out people like you, and this is awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now the hard one. So let's just say you got that young kid. He's probably 20 years old. You got a little bit of college debt. His credit's not the best, probably in like the 500-600s. He don't have late payments necessary, but he just hasn't. You know, he's just kind of struggling. What would you say? Hey, look, this is what you need to do to fix that.
Yeah. So we leverage AI softwares now. So technology is so crazy now. We leverage what's called Metro 2 AI generated softwares to where they will do the drafting of the disputing for us. So within clicks of a button, the software I use is m2goatrepairs.com. It's actually my own software.
Oh, wow.
So we have a software under our company now. But leveraging the AI has been very dope for us because the AI technology knows all the laws that the companies need to apply by, that if they find, you know, discrepancies or mistakes within what the companies have done on your credit report, which a lot of us have, they can attack them based upon that. So they will look at, basically you can put your credit report within the software. The software can read what's negatively affecting you, and then it can draft a whole, you know, Metro 2 AI systemized letter to be able to send into dispute to be able to now attack those negative items on your behalf.
That's amazing. Yeah. So what made you get into software? Like, how did you stumble into that AI? Yeah.
So that's learning, one of my brothers started the industry first. And the software part of it. So we were using other people's software at first when we got in, we didn't know about. And then we just started learning more about business, bro. Learning about business and started learning about owning things and learning about, you know, understanding that if you could be the source of something like that and people, you know, you have a big following, it's like people, you can get people to be on your own software versus someone else's. So he got into it first. I just leveraged his relationships and developers to be able to also build me out one as well. So he built one. So both of us have one. His is his name and mine is mine. But he basically just gave me the contacts of the developers and said, hey, these are the people I used to, you know, draft up this software. And then now we leverage it for the public to be able to use, or our clients or our students that we teach about it, or people in my community. We give them this software to be able to leverage to use, because people don't know what to do and how to do it when it comes to cleaning our credit.
Man, so you've helped tons of people. You have like a large school program. What's the name of your program and your school community?
So it's called the Creditpreneur Group.
Creditpreneur Group.
Yeah, so it's all about helping people clean their credit, build their credit, and get access to their first $20,000 credit card. Mm. So I just want to teach them all the tools and all the things and the processes and the step-by-step blueprints of how could you guys clean your credit up, build it, and then at least get your first credit card in here. And whatever tools or information that I know that I can provide to you all to be able to get that fulfilled is what I give them in there.
Yeah, one thing I think is neat, since I've only been doing kind of like education stuff since June, so I'm very new to the space.
Okay.
But getting into it and seeing everyone else's issues and problems and that has helped me even become learn even more.
Yeah,
100%. I assume you've done the same, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So you've seen some crazy stuff. And this is a random, weird question. Yeah. What's the most inquiries, like when someone checks your credit, what's the most inquiries you've seen at any given time on someone's credit report?
I think it was like 80 or 90.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And are those pretty easy to knock off most of the time?
Yeah, most of the time. Those are pretty easy to knock off. Leveraging the software, or we leverage CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, with certain USC code laws. But, man, the most times I've seen people have the inquiry problem is always when they go to car dealerships.
The car dealerships,
yo, they be smoking these people credit reports, bro.
Yeah, they had like 13 at a time on there and stuff. Yeah. So if I go to a car dealership tomorrow and I want to, you know, I do want to get financing, what is there something I need to say to them? Hey, run it once, or check one bank, or what would you recommend?
This is what I recommend. I don't ever go to a dealership first.
Yeah.
I will never, ever, ever, ever in my life walk into a dealership first anymore, because I don't like how they operate, and they don't seem to be on your side when it comes to your deals. They just want to get stuff sold.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They're just ready to get a sale, you know, versus give you the best deal for your buck, or, you know, for your usage. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I like to get pre-approvals for credit unions.
Okay.
So I like to get small credit unions and pre-approvals from them, and have me a pre-approval amount first. Revert back to my favorite bank I love, Navy Federal. They'll give you a check. So they'll give you a check for how much you're approved for the car. Mm-hmm. So let's just say $50,000 auto loan that you got approved for. You can come pick the check up from the bank. I take the check, and now I'm going to the bank, and I'm saying, okay, hey, I don't want to go through all the sales thing, psychology things you guys got me going through. Look, this is my check. I'm going to pay for the car in cash. Like, whatever car I want is going to be for this amount. This is what I want. I want that car. Can you give me that car and finish this process? Yeah. And I'm done.
So it helps with credit and helps with negotiation.
Yes.
Out the door, too.
And time, yeah. Yes. I'm in here for 30 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, and I'm out of here. I don't need to be in here for 4 hours signing all these different paperwork, putting my credit through all these different things. I got my pre-approval. Mm-hmm. Here goes the check. This is the car I want. Bam. You know, I'm done, and I'm out of here.
Yeah, those car dealerships, I think one of their strategies is to make you stay so long.
It's stressful.
Just to make you stay invested. And they hit your credit 1,000 times. And they upcharge you.
Yeah, so credit union, they only pull it one time.
Huh?
Credit union, only going to pull it one time.
Just one time.
Yeah. So.
Do you believe in locking your credit and freezing your credit when you're not using it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All these people out here will get you.
Yeah. What's the best way to freeze them?
Yeah, so you can go on your credit bureau sites. So the Experian app.
Okay.
TransUnion app, Equifax app. There always are buttons that you can go press on those apps or logins to where you can just lock it to where if anybody ever try to pull it, it's unpullable. Or they would alert you first and ask you, did you pull this? Yes or no. Then you confirm if you did or didn't. So you protect it.
Yeah. All right. So are you more excited about personal credit or business credit? Is there one that you love more? Yeah.
I'm a business funding and business credit guy now.
Yeah.
After I learned and started educating myself more and got deeper into it and started interacting with more high-level entrepreneurs and people of why they do it, I love the business side now.
Okay, the business side.
Yeah, 100%.
Should you get cards first on your personal or then go to business? Or is it good to kind of, hey, I'm going to do one here, one there, one here, one there?
You definitely should get stuff on your personal first. Because you want to establish some type of foundation over there first to give them like a sneak peek of what they'll give you on the business side. So typically I've seen people get approved for 2 to 3 times higher limits on the business side than that you have on the personal side. So the higher and better limits that you have on the personal side, the better odds of you being able to get it approved for higher limits on the business side. So why not have that in place first?
No, that makes sense. And the cool thing I like about business credit is if you do hold a balance above 30%, it'll hurt your personal credit score.
I love it. Yeah.
Right?
That's the benefit. That's one of the top benefits when it comes to leveraging business credit cards and things like that. It's one number one.
Now, here's one thing I've always been getting. What's the difference between an EIN number and the DUNS number? Or do you need the DUNS number, or do you just keep the EIN number?
Yeah, so you need both. The DUNS number is where you can have things on your business side that needs to be reported. So it needs to be reported somewhere that you can be able to go log in and be able to see.
So your
DUNS number is where a lot of your business credit reporting things happen and where you can go see and view and check your business credit profile report and things that are all reported to DUNS and Bradstreet. So I believe you got to have both, but we don't typically use the DUNS that much on anything. It's kind of funny and weird.
But you want it.
Yeah,
right?
you want to establish because when it comes to your information aligning across all platforms, when it comes to getting approved for things, you want that to be established so that you're in alignment with when you get approvals, all your information is aligned across all platforms of what you establish your business on.
At what point do you do credit lines too? At what point do you go for credit lines instead of just credit cards on the business side?
So people need to now have documentation now. So
the
reason why I focus on business credit cards first is because we get business credit cards with no documentation, no paycheck stubs, no bank statements, no tax returns with business credit cards. When we transition into the lines of credits and the business loans, now they're going to ask for P&L. They're going to ask for 2-year tax returns. They're going to ask for sometimes personal tax returns. And you never know what they'll ask for when you ask for business loans and business lines of credits. So I typically teach the foundational things. Let's go business credit cards first so that you can get your first round of funding for your business without no documentation. When you get a little more vetted in business and you had it open for 2 years and you've been able to actually file your tax return properly, like you're supposed to, then we'll leverage that to be able to get business lines of credit if needed or business loans.
Yeah. Can you explain to everyone at home the difference between a credit card and a charge card?
Yeah, 100%.
Because I realize a lot of people say, oh, I like that credit card. I said, that's a charge card. Right? It's a difference, right? Yeah. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So the American Express business credit card that I have is a charge card, meaning you have to pay it back within a 30-day time frame, the full balance. So it depends on what strategy you're using on investing the money that you're leveraging for your business credit cards. Do you want to not use those cards or use those cards? So the charge card make you pay it back the full balance within like 30 days. Sometimes they let you extend to 60 days, but most of the time it's like 30 days, pay it back in full whatever you spent. The ones that we love to leverage and really use is the revolving credit cards, meaning if I spend $10,000 off my business credit card, I only got to pay the minimum balance of $50 a month or $100 a month while I'm leveraging and investing with the $10,000. So, yeah, that's the difference between those two.
Okay. And at what point, or is there a way that you can get like no personal guarantee loans, like credit lines and credit cards? Or is that a different type of structure?
Big difference of a type of structure. And it's way harder.
Yeah.
Some people on the internet, I'm seeing that they kind of like bring it up and say that they can do it. But truthfully, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of building. It takes a lot of structuring. It takes a lot of trade lines in your business name.
That's like the net 30.
Yeah. That's just the beginning. It don't even matter if you got a lot of those. You got to be able to have like 25 to 30 trade lines on your business credit profile reporting before they'll be let you eligible to get approvals in your business name, EIN only, with nothing to do with your personal. So that's why we teach you down the back end, but we want to be able to make moves sooner than later. So that'll take you like a year, you know, to build out if you want to structure that properly before you can be able to get something in your business name, strictly in your business name, EIN only.
Yeah. The majority of your clients, are they usually personal or business, usually when they're coming for you to kind of get your consulting and talk with you?
So I use the personal guarantor route. So it's kind of like both. It's like you need to leverage your personal credit to get the business funding you're looking to
that
get.
Makes sense.
So you're either you got to clean a personal credit or you have to have good personal credit. There is no way around it when it comes to my strategy of getting you funded for your business because we leverage what's called personal guarantoring to be able to get the approvals on the business side. So if your personal credit is bad, we're not going to be able to give you no approvals.
Okay. So most of my audience are usually business owners. So if I'm a business owner, and let's just say I have 3, 4, 5 years, or at least 2 years of tax returns.
Okay.
I have maybe a few credit cards on it. Mm-hmm. How am I going to get some credit lines? And which banks do you recommend? Is the Navy Federal again? Or no?
No, business lines of credit. Yeah. I go to the big banks. So like mm-hmm. Chase, Bank of America. Mm-hmm. And then now it's a different ballgame now, though. Okay, now we can be in to reach our $500,000 mark when it comes to funding. You know, $750,000, $1 million in funding for our business. Mm-hmm. Because now I'm going into the bank and I'm asking how I like to do it. Me personally, I like to ask for two or three products now. Now I go into the bank instead of just asking for business credit cards. Okay, let me get a business credit card and a line of credit, and I might even get the loan too. Mm-hmm. Depending upon what I need to, if I need access to this amount of capital or not,
yeah,
it gets very lucrative now and fun because now lines of credit are approving you for, you know, two times, sometimes like two times more than with a personal credit card approving you for. Mm. So you're getting 50s and 70s and $100,000 for lines of credits now that you can be able to, you know, get a loan with you, probably $25,000 credit card, you know, depending upon how big that is, $25,000 to $30,000 credit card, and combined, now we're just coming out of one bank with $100,000 to be able to leverage and use.
Will they run your credit once if they do that, or do they hit it each time, like bing, bing, bing?
Yeah, so some credit cards that you get from certain banks will allow it to be one time. So I know some do allow you to do multiple products with one inquiry pull, but some will pull your credit card multiple times mm-hmm. if you were to get credit cards and lines of credit and loans and stuff like that. So it depends upon the bank. I know some... They all always are different, never the same. But I know some of them let you get like two credit cards for one inquiry pool. Mm. Or you can get a credit card, a line of credit, and a loan for one inquiry pool. And some of them will let you get three inquiries for each product you pull. So mm-hmm. it's just all about asking the bank, does this per product lead pull my, you know, inquiries, or is it going to be one pool for multiple products?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, because when I was first getting business, like credit lines and stuff, they ran my credit. And they didn't run it for like another 6 months. I could come ask for random stuff. Is that still the case? That's been a long time since I've done that.
So some banks will allow you to do that. So like I know American Express sometimes do that.
American Express?
American Express will allow you to get multiple products within a 90-day span because you already pulled your credit and how good it was for you to be able to get it approved and they won't have to pull it again. Mm. But it's just about asking your specific lender or bank, is that okay or not? And they'll let you know, hey, no, you get another product, you're going to get another hard pull. Or, within this time frame that you'll be able to still get more products within our bank without another hard pull because we already seen your credit report.
Okay. Now, I've heard that there's like a certain way that you can go to the bank and just have certain things set up. For example, I don't know, and you tell me, okay? Yeah. My one friend, he said, Shane, take $10,000, put it in an account, wait 3 months, go back. And like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Is there like a certain process or strategy or best case scenario that, hey, this is the moment you go and ask for that business line of credit?
So it's not mandatory, but if you're looking for the best approval odds, the more strategic things you do like that, the better odds you'll get higher approvals when it's time. Mm-hmm. So it's just relationship based, man. It's like, okay, if you have been with us and you had put $10,000 or $20,000 in our account, what I like to do is I like to open up business checkings and business savings. Mm-hmm. I like to open up the personal checking and personal savings, and I'll get a merchant account.
Okay.
And then I'll put a deposit in there. So now I have, four or five products within inside the bank, and I have money inside the bank that are deposited. And now when I go ask for money, you know, I'm in a better position and have a better, higher approval odds than a person who just has a checking account with $25 in it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's more so like, oh, this person is doing more business with us. They're more likely to work with us long term. They have more products within inside our bank, so our internal banking score can be risen. So if you don't know what an internal banking score is, it's just how much you use the bank account. It's based upon how much money you have in the bank account. It's based upon how many products you have within the bank. So if you can raise your internal banking score, this will increase your approval odds when it comes to the banks a lot, you know, because they are looking for you to build more relations with them within inside their bank. And then the more relations you build with them, the more likely they'll extend more, you know, approvals with you, whether it's auto loans, mortgages, or credit cards, or lines of credit, things like that.
Okay. So you have a young guy, he's maybe 20 years old.
Yeah.
And he's got 2 years tax returns, and he's like, I want to go nuts on this. Let's just say he makes like 30 grand a year. He's just a young guy, you know? Yeah. And what do you believe that guy could get in lines of credit? You think it'd be 50? You think it'd be maybe 20? Like, what do you think? I know that's kind of hard to guess because it depends on the year. Let's just use J.P. Morgan, for example.
Yeah, so he can be at a – if he got 2 years, he got the credit score, everything, he still can accumulate $500,000.
$500,000? Yeah. And do you ask, hey, look, I want a $500,000 line of credit unsecured?
No. So it would be strategic. It wouldn't be from one lender. So it wouldn't be – you did say Chase, so maybe rephrase that. From one bank, we just get what they would give us. So – if him, it looks as though, because right now we're getting anywhere between $40,000 to $80,000 limits on one credit card with Chase. Mm-hmm. So let's just say on a lower end, a $50,000 Chase credit card, he can be able to get, he can double dip his products and get two of those. Mm-hmm. So he can probably get around, I would say, $80,000 to $100,000 in credit cards with Chase with one inquiry pool. Then if he got tax returns, we're going to get a line of credit too. So I'll say we get another $50,000 in that area. So we probably have like $150,000 already with one bank. And then what I was saying was what we could do was we can go to different banks. Now that's where I was going, where, you know, you can be at an edge of on $500,000, because if I go get some credit cards, lines of credits and loans from multiple different lenders and banks, I can accumulate a stacking method to where I can be able to get, you know, a large amount of money.
Should you try and do it all within the same time period, or is it better to do like every month or like every 6 months?
I guess it's periodically when you need it. So like I don't like to say, oh, let's go to 10 lenders and get 10 credit cards a day, tomorrow. Now, it's just like as you need it based. If I don't need $750,000, I'm not going to get $750,000. Like I'll, if my project or what I want to invest in or things I want to invest my money in is about to cost me $50,000, I might go get $100,000. You know, I might go get $150,000. I'm not going to go get $750,000. So I guess it depends on, you know, how much money you need now and just go based upon that. And then I like to spread it out sometimes, though. I wouldn't get like 10 different lenders at one time. Maybe two or three here. Maybe wait a while and get a two or three more or something like that. That's how I really would spread it out strategically.
Okay, now we can give you another. I'm just throwing out all this nerdy stuff out because it's always. So let's just say that there's a guy mid 30s. He owns an insurance company. He has $80,000 in personal credit card debt. And he's maxed out.
Yeah.
What would you recommend? Say, hey, would you be trying to get him business credit to move it over there? Or would you try and get him to somehow get a quick loan? Or like, what would you say, hey, do this strategically?
Yeah, the kind of what you said a little bit. There's two routes to that. We could build his business credit up strong enough to where the approvals could get up enough to where he can offset that amount to liquidate off the business side and pay off the personal side. Mm-hmm. Or we like to get what's called subprime lenders or fintech companies. Oh, sometimes we can get it based upon how much money you make. So let's just say we make $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month on revenue in our business bank account. We could be able to get lending off of that, which will probably be high interest, but we can be able to leverage it off the loan to be able to pay off the credit cards to be able to now offset that utilization for our credit score to go back up. And what I like to do is if my credit score go back up, I go get the business credit money, liquidate the money off the business credit side, and then pay off the personal loan now.
Okay. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So you gotta strategically move the debt around to where it's not penalizing you if you can. And those are the strategies we can be able to try to do if we can. You know, if it's applicable for you to get to do it, cool. But if not, yeah, we gotta pay those things down.
That's the hard part too.
Yeah, it's hard.
But it is easier to sit on that business EIN number than personal, you know?
100%.
Yeah. So how do you? I've heard about people liquidating credit cards. Is there any kind of neat little strategy? One of my friends, he said, Shane, I buy all these gift cards and liquidate the cards. Or sometime, I don't know, they have a bunch of credit. What do you recommend for that? Or do you just say, no, I don't do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't do it at this stage I'm at now. I don't need to because I just use credit cards for everything. But I have access now to a liquidation company, which would do a done for you service, but they charge. So they're going to charge you a percentage, probably like 5% to be able to do it for you. And the method that you're talking about, it's a method called manufacturing spending, where people were doing it like, we can go to Dick's Sporting Goods and spend $5,000 on equipment and be able to do like a return. And the return will go and do a split payment method.
So it sounds like a lot of work.
Yes, it's so much tedious work. Some people be like, well, how is that possible? You know, it's just a split payment method. If I go to a store and be able to use half of my credit card, half of my bank account, I can be able to do a return. And then I'll do all the whole return onto my bank account to where the money becomes available in the bank account instead of on my credit card. And then you can either pay it back off or you can be able to.
So were you born in a wealthy family?
Nah, man. No. Nah. My father passed away when I was a baby. my mom, in the middle of us growing up, had gotten some trouble. She went to the feds for some years. And I was, I was with my family, my auntie, my grandma, and things like that. I wasn't like homeless. I wasn't like poor, but it was just like barely just enough. You know what I mean? It was just like enough to pay the bill, take care of, to eat and take care of the bills. And that was it. It was nothing more, nothing less than that. And that's kind of like where we lay when it comes to our family.
And what made you overcome that to try and be something? Because clearly you're successful now. How old are you, man?
Yeah, I'm 31.
Man, you're young. Yeah. Okay. Well, what made you overcome that? Was it a certain mentor or a moment? Or was it just luck? What was it?
Yeah, it's definitely not luck, but right place, right time. Yeah. Because, man, I was in a comfortable state where I was in Chicago, and it's like, I was just doing what the normal was, that we knew what to do, what we thought was the thing to do in life. Was my grandparents worked for 40 years in a row, worked a job and retired, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my mom started working her job, and she was just about to retire, and everybody was just doing his thing. And I came across, I told you my friend that I told you about earlier, you know, he came across getting a mentor, and that whole concept of learning from someone at a high level of already doing the things that you're trying to do to be able to, you know, get that information, to be able to implement, to be able to do the things that you don't know how to do. Mm-hmm. So he did it first, and I'm so glad he did it first, because then it rubbed off on me to be able to see some things that was going on and get, you know, wary of what's going on and understand, like, hey, maybe I can go learn these things too and do these things too. And it put me in position to go start searching for this stuff. What is a mentor? You know, should I pay somebody thousands of dollars to learn from them? Man, what is that? You know what I mean? But it was a proof in the pudding concept. It was like, he did it. He learned the information. He came back. It worked. I seen it with my own eyes. There's nothing else.
He
nobody
became a believer.
Yeah. Nothing no one else can tell me about paying a mentor to tell you some information and doing the thing that he's there to do, because I seen it with my own eyes, him do it right next to me as I wasn't listening at first until he came back with the result. You know what I mean? And then, like, from now on then out, my mindset was just a whole complete 360, bro. I started looking at everything way different. I started looking at the way I wanted to grow in life, the way I wanted to do things. I started just really understanding that there's people out here that know what to do and how to do it. You just have to get either around them or get their information of what they have that got them to where they are, and be able to replicate that or be able to use it in your life some type of way or form. And it just would make life so much easier, man. So I did that. I did that for the next 4 or 5 years. And here we are.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's important. You're actually saying what every successful person I know, except for drug dealers, you know, but every successful person that I know, they always say you got to put yourself around those elite people. It's important. How important to you, other than just mentors, but putting yourself around like-minded people?
Yeah. As soon as I understood that concept, I moved from where I was within like 60 days.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I came to Atlanta. I saw the environment of people like at events, people meeting up to eat, and they're just talking about business. People doing like conferences, people doing like business, like little meetups and like little conference rooms, people doing teaching classes, and people just doing all these things. I'm like, I never seen none of this at home. I'm like, all right, if I want to grow, if I want this to be my reality, if I want to get next to the people who are at a high level and millionaires and multimillionaires, I gotta be here.
Got to be around.
I went home, man. I thought about it for about 2 weeks. I decided then and there, I'm out of here. It was just so crazy that I came to an event in Atlanta, and I bumped shoulders and I met with over 50 millionaires within a week.
And wow.
And 1 week I met, bumped shoulders, either shook hands or seen them at the event, could have you know, communicated with them. In 1 week, and at home, out of 26 years of my life, I met zero. So it's like, this doesn't make sense to stay here.
Yeah.
I'm about to go out there where all the billionaires at, and I'm about to get around the proximity so I can be able to have them rub off on me.
Yeah.
You know, and learn from them and build relationships and start just, you know, trying to grow.
I was going to ask you, but I think you just asked, what would be the number one thing you would tell yourself? You go back and tell your 20-year-old self, would it be get out and be around these people?
It would be start learning faster, get a mentor.
Yeah.
And then the environment.
Yeah. How much have you spent on mentors?
Yeah, I think I'm about like $200,000 in on consulting, mentoring, and coaching, and courses, books, all those things.
And what do your friends think of that, saying, you spent $200,000 on mentors? Do they think you got scammed or something? You're like, man, you have no idea, right?
Yeah, so at first it was like a weird eye to it. It's like, I don't know about this, paying people $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for some information, man. They're not gonna give you like a car.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like from information. And yeah, I believed it right when I seen it from that first time with that story. I said, I was willing to pay. Like, I was willing to pay the price for whatever information that I needed to have. Yeah. I was willing to pay it from then on. Now, a lot of people still don't understand it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people still are stuck in a mind frame of not understanding why they need to do it. Why would they pay so much? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the purpose of keep doing it over and over and over again? They're still stuck in a mindset of they don't know or why they should or sacrifice to be an investor themselves.
They won't. Most people won't even invest $1,000 in it. And I'm like, man, listen. Even if you only make, if you take information and make like you, you made millions of dollars now.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you paid $1,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 like you did. I think the ROI was there.
Mm-hmm.
I think just some people have this mentality that they hate gurus online or the, you know, gurus. Not all of them are right. I get that. Yeah. But like a lot of them are. They're legit.
Yeah.
But a lot of people say they're scams. Yeah. They're not real. But I got most of my best education, better than I learned anything in school, from them guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I'm with you, man.
Do you have any haters like, you're charging me? You know, you have that stuff?
Yeah, I got a lot of it. I get the same hackles of, you shouldn't be charging for information, or you're charging too high, or, man, if you're a millionaire now, you should just do this stuff for free, man. Why would you continue to charge people? I get it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm used to it
now. But it takes time. I mean, you spent clearly a lot of money, a lot of time, and you're saving them years of time and putting it into a little bit of time.
Yeah. Right? So I try to reframe the mindset of those people as much as I can, but I don't go too far into it now. Like I'm so deep into it. It's like, if you get it, you get it. You don't, I can try to, you know, give you the push out there to get the mindset shift. But if you don't catch it, man, we got stuff to do over here, man. You know, the people that want to ride with us, we're gonna ride with us. We're gonna keep moving. You know.
So outside of that, then what kind of stuff do you invest in? So when you got business funding, what was the kind of stuff that you started investing then, and what are you investing in now?
Yeah, so I have invested into my business and my personal brand a lot in marketing. That was my first stage of trying to invest my money to make me more money was personal branding and marketing. I figured, if I have an offer now, if I can start paying for marketing, advertisement, getting in front of more people, building my following, building people to know who I am, if I can put more money into that, I can be able to grow that part of my business when it comes to my scaling my offers.
Yeah.
And so a few things I invested into now, domain sites. I have a partnership where I invested into domain sites with a partner of mine.
That's really cool, man. I have no idea anything about that.
Yeah, eight-figure earner has a whole business model with that I invested into. Uh-huh. We get a pretty good return off that as of now. I'm also a part owner in a 104-unit apartment complex in Louisiana now.
In Louisiana? What part of Louisiana?
It's the suburb of it. I forgot the exact city. But it's not far from the biggest city.
That's good. Suburbs there is better, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so a part owner in that. And then my main focus has been information, man.
Information
and marketing and advertising has been my main source of investing into myself and my business.
And getting those points, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mentorship, man, investing into advertising and marketing has been my go-to.
Yeah. I'm new to personal branding. That's why I've been seeking out mentors on that. And I'm new to it. Like I was saying, I'm new to this podcast stuff.
Cool, man.
How important to you has personal branding been? Like, what has it changed for you, just the fact that you've been doing it so long?
This has been my number one way that I've been able to grow my business. Mm-hmm. I understood early from one of my mentors that if don't no one know you, they can't flow you.
So, I like that.
So it's impossible for somebody to pay you if they don't know you.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you have to do in order for more people to know who you are, or at least who your brand is, or, you know, how do you get in front of more people to get more eyeballs on your thing or your offer or your products to be able to sell it more, you know? And I loved that concept. I'm like, well, it makes sense. If I have a website and 1,000 people come to it per month, the first thing I do to double my money is, how do I get 2,000 people to go to my website per month instead of 1,000?
Right. Yeah,
if I double my leads, I'm going to double my income. Mm-hmm. So I love that concept, and I understood it right away when he said it. And I'm like, this makes a lot of sense. If 10,000 people see my website versus 100 people see my website, I'm pretty sure I'll make 10x the amount of money. So strategies do I need to do, or what do I need to do and put my, or to put myself in front of more bigger audiences or bigger platforms, or leverage social media, or what do I need to do in order to grow my brand, get more people to see who I am and what I offer and what I can help people with. In any way that I can be able to do that, I'm willing to be able to do it.
Yeah, and the fact that you're doing it, you're making people be aware that there is credit consulting and it helps people.
Yeah.
So tell me about some of the people that you don't have to tell their names, but like, what if you say, hey, I helped this lady fix her credit, she was able to buy a home or something. What's some stories that you've heard and you're like, man, that just, that makes me feel good that I was able to do that.
So many now, because I got thousands of people in my communities now. Yeah. The last one was very, very kind of like touching to me. It was this mother who has five kids. She had a car that broke down. She was like trying to figure out like, how am I about to take care of five kids and a single mother and get to work and do the things I need to do, or take them to daycare or take them to people that's going to help me watch them and my family members and things like that. And the car that I have won't start and it's broken down. I have to like, there's, I don't have the cash in order to get $1,000 car, or I mean like a $3,000 car or a reliable car for my kids. First of all, I got five kids, but then also for my work and the things I need, errands I need to do, all the things I need to do. And she came to my group, man, and she used one of the methods. She was able to get her credit score up to 700, and just like, it wasn't really big. It was just like, I got a car where she had got a, like a car. It was a big, like 8-seater or something like that, with no money down.
Wow.
You know, that she can afford. And then now she was just like so happy. She was just like, and it's not like she's about to make $1 million and big success story, but it was just like something that small that she didn't understand that she, what did she need to do with her credit in order to go in a credit union to be able to get the approval that she was looking for to be able to get her a reliable car that she can just drive every day to get to work without breaking down or not starting and take care of her family. And it's like, that one was cool for me. I was like, you know, it's not even, I got some big stories of people doing some big stuff, but like that one was like more important than even like people making $100,000 a month leveraging stuff. It was like, dang, just like that piece of information that she got, man, it just changed a lot for her. Now, and now she don't have to be on, she was saying she's like on the side of the road and stuff sometimes with five kids in the car, car breaking down, and she can't get approved for cars. She can't. So like, that was something that just like was powerful of her to just to understand what to do. She just didn't know what to do. So like me telling her what to do, her actually implementing and doing it, being able to get a car with no money down, she was just so happy. Bro. It was only like a $30,000 car, but she was just so happy, man. She's just like, I'm just fulfilled. I'm good. I just thought I really just wanted, you know what I mean? So that was dope.
Man. All right. So now I want to know a little bit about you. So what did you do when you were younger as for work? Like, did you work at Chick-fil-A, for example? Like my buddy over there, he worked at Chick-fil-A. How long did you work there, Austin?
4 years.
Did you work 4 years at Chick-fil-A or anything like that?
he should know some good customer service, though.
He does.
So it's for his business.
He says, my pleasure.
So I was playing basketball in high school. I tried to go the basketball route. I thought I was going to be a basketball star in the NBA.
You're
and all
tall,
this stuff.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't it. I wasn't good enough to get to the NBA. I thought I was at first, but nah. So that dream ended fast. So I was really good, though, my whole life. I was like the starter on all my teams from little age to high school. We was one of the top teams in high school in Illinois, too. But right after that, I went to like a college in Iowa. It was like this D2 college. And I dropped out within like 3 months. I hated school and college. I hated it. Like, it was like, I just couldn't get. That lady, she said for me to draft up a 15-page paper, and I tell her, I don't know what I'm about to write for these 15-page paper.
Sounds like
so I just didn't like it. So I quit that. And then I was trying to figure it out, man. Oh, man, it was not good. I was jobs, factory working jobs, bro. I was trying, like, flipping iPhones. I was, like, people were breaking their screens. I was replacing their screens and fixing that. I was doing that
That's
for a little
crazy.
Bit.
Crazy, yeah.
I was reselling shoes, getting them at a nice price and knowing where.
Like the Nikes and stuff.
And Jordan and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I was reselling shoes and trying to get profits off of that, which wasn't a lot of money that to really run a little life.
Like a side hustle thing.
Trying that and back and forth between those type of things didn't work, but I never could gain no traction to be able to grow things. I was always like a make the money and just pay bills type of thing. It was just like a recycle of just, man, make the money, pay bills. I'm just at this point just working to pay bills, and I was like, man, I had to get out of that cycle. Sheesh, you know, it just, I always quit every job I did because I just couldn't, I couldn't do it, man. These 8-hour shifts and stuff like that, bro. It was very tough, and I just mentally couldn't do it. And like, I just didn't want to do this stuff. My knees and back hurting. I'm like, all right, I got to figure out something. And just luckily my friend had got exposed to the information that he got exposed to, that he can be able to come back and teach me it so that I can do my, what's called like my binge learning session for like a 6-month learning binge of a lock-in, meaning like I don't, no outside, no traveling, no spending money, no going outside, no yeah. TV, no gossiping on the phone. No,
you
like,
got discipline.
No, yeah, I went to a deep discipline mode to where I was only one to learn, and I only wanted to implement what I learned. That's it. Like every day I wake up, I don't want to do anything else. Like I went into like a binge of that for like 6 months. And then once I came out of that and I seen the type of result and how fast it happened because I was just so laser disciplined and focused, I'm like, if I could just continue to keep doing this, you know, man, I seen what was going to happen before it happened. I'm like, if I continue to keep doing this, there's going to be nothing that I can't do.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? If I can keep learning new ways to do things, new ways to invest, new ways to, you know, create revenue for myself, keep implementing at the rate that I'm implementing and it's fast and it's now. It's like, man, it's literally, I don't feel like it's nothing that I can't do anymore.
You know, one thing I'm hearing from you, you have an I can do it attitude, and or how can I do it attitude, not I can't do it.
100%.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years? Do you have like a 3 to 5 year goal?
Yeah, so in 3 to 5 years, I would have had enough people in my community, over 10,000 people, to where I have taught them the leverage in other people's money's methods to where I can come back and I can do like a group thing. I can be able to say, okay, I taught 10,000 people how to get access to their first $100,000. All right, let's all put up $10,000 into a project together. I'll be the leader of
That's
it.
A great
I
idea.
Orchestrate it. I put all the pieces together for us. You guys come with your small investment to be invested into something, you know, an asset to where we can go get some hotels or we can go get some skyscrapers. Like, how could I leverage my expertise and the way that I taught them to be able to get access to money, to be able to now come together as one project, to be able to obtain something to where everybody can be able to benefit from it and everybody can be able to, you know, have some type of, you know, assets under their belt in some type of way or form and build off of that. Because I know it's the next problem that my ideal customer has once they get their credit together and they get access to some funding is they don't know what to do with it, to leverage it to make the money. So now I'm trying to solve that next problem for them by, you know, using my expertise and my relationships to be able to bring that back to them, to then they can invest into things with me and we all can be able to get, you know, some.
Now that's an interesting idea. Do you do any like in-person events right now or is it all just virtual? How does it work in your group?
Yeah, so we don't do any conferences anymore because the ones that we did didn't make any money. So I'm going to be transparent to say I'm not trying to lose money just to host events. You know what I mean? So I didn't like it, to be honest. I had to change my model. So I did a lot of online stuff. So the only time we host in-person events is if you are in my higher tier programs. If you are in my inner circle or my higher tier programs, then we will host in-person events with you guys, which is mastermind sessions, because, you know, you paid to get that access. But other than that, I'm not too fond of events until I can figure out the best strategy to where it makes sense for me and the people coming.
Yeah.
You know, both of us, instead of me just losing money trying to host a big event and make it cool and make it exciting and make the, you know, experience dope for everyone without taking a big loss at the end of every event.
They know we held one in December, a real estate one.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, man, we're down $100,000.
Oh,
and here I am trying to make myself, which we enjoyed it. We had great people, honestly, great attendees, great speakers.
But 100%.
It's not a loss. It's an investment because 100%. Here's the idea. We'll have future partners.
Yeah,
we've
sure.
already made some deals with some of the people.
For and all sure.
that, but I'd like to at least break even.
At least if I would take that. and it's a lot of work too.
It's
kind of stressful.
I got gray hair because of
bro,
that.
Oh man, orchestrating the event and making sure it's on time, making sure all that thing, the website, man. Yeah. So at least break even.
Well, you come to our event May 30th, okay, and come hang out.
Okay,
and stuff.
Yeah, okay. No, I love going to
and
the
I'll
event,
lose the money. Yeah, you come to it.
Hey, all right, cool. I like that one better. I'll even pay you to go and do that because now I've got to worry about all that stressful things and losing a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I know it's strategies to what we can do to make it make sense for our business to be able to run events. I just have to learn more. That's all. Yeah. I just have to learn the strategies of what people are using to be able to make it make sense for everyone that's, you know, a part of this. But right now, I gotta I gotta wait because I kept taking L's, and I wanted to do it because I was loving the people in person and experience, and I'm seeing other people doing it look cool and it look good, and everybody should be doing it, and everybody should be in person and stuff like that. And then I took the two L's. I'm like, wait a minute, this is not
my charge card is holding a balance. I'm just kidding.
I was like, let me hold off on that until I understand the right structure of what we should be able to host it and be able to make it make sense.
Did you have a ton of speakers when y'all did y'all's event and everything?
Mm-hmm. Like 8 to 10 speakers or stuff like that.
Well, how many attendees were you shooting for? We shot for just 200-300 in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think my first one at home was like 100 and something. My second one was like 200 and something.
And you still lose.
And then I still lose. I was like, oh, no. Nope. I got to hold off on this. I'm not going to continue to keep doing this. I got to wait. So, I host virtual classes and things like that and virtual events.
But the passionate part, and also you probably have people, I assume, all over the country. They can't just fly in because even if it's a $90 ticket, it's going to cost them $1,000, hotel, this, that. So you do a lot of your stuff online.
Yeah.
Then your inner circle come in person and have that event. And then you don't have to spend a lot on some big, huge conference. You can actually give more value to them in
100%. Really intimate and it's really helpful to them to directly just talk to me in an intimate setting.
Yeah.
And multiple times for the price point they pay, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So tell everyone, where can they find you online? Do you have a YouTube channel, Instagram?
Mm-hmm. So all platforms. I got TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. It's all Smitty the Goat. So underscore SMITTY the Goat. Mm-hmm. And on YouTube and Instagram, they all just spelled the same, Smitty the Goat. I create content around the things that I'm talking about today every day, man. Every day you will see me show up on social media, giving content, giving value or promoting or doing whatever I'm going to do. But every day you're going to see me. So whenever you're looking to find anything or the information that I'm putting out and talking about in the pod, you can be able to find it within my content as well.
Absolutely. And a lot of people do not understand the power of credit. They don't learn it, like I said, in school.
Yeah.
Honestly, mom and dad don't usually teach us.
Nope.
So it's just neat that you're actually doing this, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, man.
You guys make sure to check them out, follow them, and they're going to all see you at our conference, too.
100%.
You'll be one of our VIP people.
When you said May?
May 30th.
May 30th. What's the event around? Real estate?
Well, no, it's general business.
Our general
real
business.
Estate one's in December, and then this one's going to be, it'll probably still be about 40% business, though.
Nice.
We have some cool people. You know Ben Mollis, he's a real estate guy. He'll be there. We have some other guys going to be there, too, but it'll be fun.
No, I'm always for events, bro. I love events.
Well, awesome, man. Well, thanks for being on the show, man.
Honey, I thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you guys having me.
All right, see ya.
Yeah.